On episode 632 of the 40 Plus Fitness podcast, we meet Colleen Cashman and discuss a rather touchy topic, alcohol. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/632. Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness, the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. Each week, we dive deep into health and fitness topics that affect those of us over 40. I'm Coach Allen. I'm an NASM certified personal trainer with specializations in corrective exercise, behavior change, performance enhancement, and fitness nutrition. A precision nutrition level 1 coach, a FAI certified functional aging specialist, and an OTA level 2 online trainer. Each week, I'm joined by our co-host, Coach Rachel. She is an NASM certified personal trainer and a RRCA level 1 run coach. Let us be your coaches as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go. Today, we're talking about alcohol consumption and addiction. This is an important topic because the empty calories from alcohol is often cited as the main reason people struggle to lose weight and keep it off. If you're struggling with alcohol, I strongly suggest you listen to this episode. But if you're really serious about making something happen, not just read, listen, and talk about it, then I'd like you to join us at the 10,000 Club. This is a community of like-minded people all looking to lose weight and improve our health. And it's free to join. Learn more at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/club. Get the support and accountability you need to kick the alcohol habit for good. 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/club. Hey, Raz, how are you?
Good, Alan. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Yeah. Like I had mentioned before, I've been trying to get on different podcasts and whatnot, and so I've had a few more recorded.
Awesome.
We're a little bit more systematic here, sorta, in that I'll do a recording, and the expectation is that that recording is going to go live in a few weeks, maybe up to 6 weeks, depending on how far ahead we've gotten, and then you and I do our thing a few weeks before it's due. But some of these guys are like, like I recorded an interview yesterday. He's like, well, so that'll go up in the middle of April.
Wow.
Okay.
That's far out.
Hope the earth is still here in April, but.
Wow.
So some of them won't come up for quite some time. I recorded one the other day and she's like, might come out in June.
Oh,
she hadn't even started her podcast. It was like we're literally, we did two interviews in one, and that's not due to come out till June. But if you're interested in the podcast that I'm doing, the different media appearances, I've created a page. So if you go to 40plusfitness.com/media, as these come live, I'll be putting them out there. So this is just a good place if you get bored during the week and say, I kind of want to hear Alan's voice again, because, you know, I'm that good. then yeah, that's a good place to go and hear me talk a little bit more about some of the things that I talk about on here. But again, coming from a different perspective, because someone else is interviewing me versus me just saying what I want to say. So if you're interested in that, yeah, go to 40plusfitness.com/media, and that's going to take you to my media appearances page. And that's where you'll see all those start to come up. I've actually done, at this point that we're recording this, I've done 17 interviews.
Oh my goodness.
since January, middle of January.
Wow. So
17 interviews in about a month's time. Those are scheduled out. Some of them may never even see the light of day if they don't actually launch their podcast, which happens. People actually go through the process of recording interviews, putting it all together, and then never launch, which happens. But, you know, hopefully not this time, but it will. So, I'm going through and having these, and I've got more scheduled, and I'm working on getting even more scheduled. So, that's going to kind of be a thing this year for me. Then on a personal note, I actually lifted weights yesterday.
Alan, you say that like you haven't been in the gym in a while.
I haven't, because I broke my ribs.
I broke a rib, right. Remember?
Oh, gosh.
Weightlifting and broken rib are not friends. It took me about 4 weeks to feel like, okay, I'm not hurting enough that I feel like I can comfortably lift. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, by hurting, I mean, I hurt getting in and out of bed because the rib. It's getting less and less and less. So yesterday I felt comfortable. And I did an exercise that had my rib not healed, I would have known it right away, which is a bent arm pullover. So you're laying on the bench and you have a dumbbell over your chest with two hands. And then you let that dumbbell go back over your head off the edge of the bench, and it stretches your torso. And then you use your chest and somewhat your triceps to support, but basically you're trying to just make sure your arms are staying in a solid position. So it's really just a supporting role, but it uses your chest to pull the weight up, and it really stretches your whole rib cage and torso. And so at that point I did that, not with a lot of weight. Again, I'm restarting. Mm-hmm. So lower the weights, be responsible, take care of yourself. But yes, I was able to lift weights yesterday. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Good. And how'd you feel afterwards? No residual soreness around your ribs?
No, nothing around the ribs. Good. Other than, again, you know, the normal stuff, getting bedded.
Roll onto
my right side.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. That, you know, but that is what it is. That'll probably be there for a while.
Sure.
But yeah, I feel good.
Yeah, I'm glad you're back. Well, that's great news.
How are things up there?
Good. I wanted to let you know anyway that I just renewed my NASM certification. I was able to get my couple of credit hour training done and renewed my certification. So that's updated.
Good.
And I also am in good standing again with the RRCA level one coach. So I've got that all up to date. So just want to let you know, I got my homework done, still certified. All is good.
that was so funny. Somehow or another, their emails started going to my spam box, and they were emailing me saying, you know, it's time to renew. And I wasn't getting those messages. And so I was sitting there, and it was just weird because I was changing computers and I was going through something, and I ended up in that spam box looking through them. I'm like seeing all of these messages. I'm like, holy crap. I didn't even think that I haven't received an email from these guys in forever. Yeah. It was 2 years after it had expired. So I had to do it again. I've actually gotten the NASM certification twice from two different textbooks.
I
don't want to have to do that again. So
no.
Good reminder. I need to go back in there and double check that, you know, so things like that. Yeah. Fire extinguisher. I mean, fire detectors, check the battery, things like that.
maintenance.
Don't let little things become big things because you didn't take care of the little things. So
that's
good,
right.
Good. All right. Well, are you ready to have a conversation with Colleen?
Sure.
Our guest today is a recovery certified master coach and author of Life Off Label, a handbook for creating your own brand of health and happiness. She holds an MSc in health coaching, a BS in education, and a woman's functional and integrative medicine professional certificate. She helps women bypass the stigma and drama that society associates with sobriety by focusing on what's really important, our relationship with ourselves. She combines emotional intelligence, positive psychology, and coaching to support women who want to step into their own power and redesign the next chapter of their lives. With no further ado, here's Colleen Cashman. Colleen, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you so much. It's good to be back talking with you, Alan.
Yeah. I was on your podcast not too long ago, or interviewed a couple not too long ago, and it's a really good conversation. I'm glad we're going to have this one because I wanted to bring in an expert. I have a Facebook group. If you're a part of it, you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group. And occasionally, yes, I do ask the group, what are the things that you want to hear? So if you want to be a little bit more involved in the podcast and what we do here, I'd like you to go join us at the group. But one of our group members, Sarah, did mention that she wanted me to talk on alcohol. And I realized, okay, I have had conversations with a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But I, you know, it's been a long, long, long time since I've actually just had an episode on alcohol. And like everything else, science rolls and science deals and science does its thing. So we're constantly, I don't say constantly, but occasionally a new study or something will pop out and it's like, you know, this or that. And I read most of that with a grain of salt. So I wanted to bring in someone who sees this, does this every day of their life from a personal perspective and also from a professional perspective. So I'm really glad to have you on the show.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I think I offer a new and kind of unique perspective. I don't really fit in the sober community. I don't fit in the drinking community. So I love kind of just thinking for myself, and that is what I encourage people to do. So let's get into okay. it.
Well, yeah, let's jump into your story, because you're not walking around with a coin in your pocket.
No.
So you can tell us about how you got into all of this.
So I was a normal drinker for years. I would have classified myself as a bit of a partier. If there were drinks to be had, I was participating in that. And over the years, I was a very high-functioning, successful perfectionist, if you will. I'm the mother of four children. I had a career. I'm busy. I do all the things, and I do them all well. I run marathons. I teach hot yoga. I volunteer. I do a good job with clients. And so I was living this perfectionistic life. And because I drank a lot, I began to drink more and more, where I was relying on alcohol to relieve my stress. What I now know, spoiler alert, is that when people drink to relieve stress, it drastically changes how the brain responds to alcohol, and also, quite frankly, puts you on the fast pass to addiction. I don't want to use that word to be scary, because we can get addicted to our phones. We're addicted to coffee. We're addicted to a lot of things. It is not hard to break the addiction, nor is there a black and white line that says, okay, you're addicted versus not. Because of course, there's psychological components. There's the brain chemistry component. But the bottom line is, I drank in a way where I innocently became addicted to alcohol because I was not properly informed. You know, alcohol is not a food group. So any study out there that says, oh, you know, you need two glasses a day for heart health or whatever, like, it's all crap put out by the big alcohol companies or whoever is going to benefit from that study. Alcohol is a drug. I didn't know that. And I have a master's degree in nutrition. And I missed all the signs that I was actually painting myself into a corner. And I can talk about how that happens, but I missed the signs, because in our culture, we all believe that there's two types of drinkers, the normal drinkers and the alcoholics. And so I've always been a normal drinker. And so when I was experiencing negative consequences and side effects, I didn't connect the dots. And I thought that it was me, that it was getting harder and harder to not drink, because my brain was associating alcohol with stress relief. And addiction, as it develops, is actually a learning process. It's not a disease. We learn subconsciously to solve problems. It's kind of like how, you know, the algorithm learns what you like. The more dog videos you watch on YouTube, the more the YouTube algorithm suggests dog videos and then hides all of the other things. So if alcohol becomes a coping skill.
Well, I want to stop you. Thank you so much for saying that out loud, because now that's what I'm going to see on Facebook all afternoon.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we understand how to train the algorithm. We're all doing that these days. We choose what we like, and then the algorithm asks us questions. If you liked this show on Netflix, may I recommend? And that's what happens in our brain. If alcohol reduced your stress on Friday night after a long, stressful week at work, may I recommend alcohol on a Monday night? And it just, over time, the brain forms rules. That's what learning is. If A equals B, if stress, then alcohol. And then it begins to apply that rule in new situations. And this is a subconscious learning process. So my brain learned that alcohol reduces stress, that alcohol is a reward, alcohol is a treat, alcohol is what I need to celebrate. And it just built out the rule of when to apply alcohol into more and more situations. And then suddenly I'm a daily drinker and I find it harder and harder to not drink. And I want to explain, Alan, a little bit about that, why that is. People who struggle to control their drinking or to not drink when they said they're going to be sober tonight, why is that hard? It's not because we just really love to drink, or we want to get drunk, or we want to get high, or we need to escape all of our emotions. Like, that's not what it is. What happens is the more you use alcohol, it spikes your cortisol levels, and it also spikes your dopamine. What goes up must come down. And with the dopamine, what happens is if you imagine dopamine in your brain, which is your motivation to do things, it's like water in a bathtub. And if you're making waves in the water, some of the water spills out. And if you don't give your brain time to recalibrate your baseline levels of dopamine back to normal, then over time, there's less and less water in your bathtub. You're less and less motivated to do normal things, other coping skills. And then over time, you just want more and more alcohol because alcohol is the only thing that makes you feel normal. We're not drinking to get high. We're drinking because not drinking feels bad. We're really, really low. So subconsciously, we're trying to regulate our brain chemistry. And the other thing I'll say about chemistry there is that because alcohol is a depressant drug, that means it's a sedative, it depresses the central nervous system. Because of that, the brain has to maintain homeostasis and it releases cortisol to keep you awake, which is why on a Friday night when you're exhausted and you're like, fine, I'll just go and have one, suddenly it's 3 a.m. and you can't remember where you parked your car and you've made a bunch of new best friends. That's not just because you mixed Red Bull and vodka. That's because your brain releases cortisol to keep you awake. It's agitating. So you might go to sleep and or pass out, but then you wake up in the middle of the night with that anxiety. And then you also have higher levels of stress the next day. If you're drinking on a regular basis, your cortisol levels are really, really high. You're living in a chronic state of stress. So it just perpetuates this cycle where alcohol's the only thing that relieves the stress that's caused by alcohol, but you don't know that because you're not educated. So here I am, mother of four, doing the thing, and COVID comes. And all of the reasons I had to not drink went away. I don't have to drive my kids. I'm not teaching yoga in the morning. I'm not going anywhere. And so happy hour got earlier and earlier. My recovery time in the morning got later and later. My day was just collapsing into one big full-time job of managing my drinking. And I woke up and went, I can't do this anymore. But on that day, because I believed there's normal drinkers and alcoholics, I called AA and found wonderful people, very supportive. But now I switched from thinking of myself as a drinker to thinking of myself as someone who can't drink because there's something wrong with me. And that began a couple of year journey where I realized that, you know, identifying in any way with alcohol as a drinker or a non-drinker means that you're giving away your power. And so after a few years of perfect sobriety, I realized that I had just changed teams. I'd gone from, I was still playing the alcohol game, but instead of seeing myself as a drinker, I saw myself as a non-drinker who couldn't drink. And so I just, and when you think about Alan identity and what that means, if you identify as somebody who wants to drink, whether you do drink or don't drink, you see the rest of the world like that too. You walk into a party and you see the bar line and who's drinking and who's not drinking. Now that I've done the work that I no longer identify with alcohol at all, I walk into a party and see who I want to see. Is there good food here? You know, what's going on? I don't even think about alcohol anymore. So my recovery process kind of went from extreme to where I have now landed in the middle. I enjoy a glass of wine here or there, but I don't have trouble controlling myself. My brain is fully healed. My cortisol and my dopamine is all good. And so now I feel like a normal person again.
You've said so much in there. I think I could talk to you for hours about this right now. But I think one of the key things that you brought up early in this was that there's basically two sides to this to start with. One is It's the learned behavior. And that very much follows the habit formation formula of trigger, action, reward. And then that reward we want it again. So when the next time there's a trigger, you know, I didn't finish that bottle of wine last night, I guess I'll have one more glass tonight kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That you've got that happening. And then on the inside, we've now got the chemical stuff going on in our brain and our body that is basically propping us up to keep doing this.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually three components. There's your brain chemistry, so dopamine, you know, all of that. Then your nervous system, which is your cortisol levels and your adrenals. And then your mindset, which is really the number one predictor. You can fix your brain chemistry and you can regulate your nervous system. It's the mindset, the belief that either I need alcohol to relieve my stress, or I'm the type of person that always overdoes it. I'm an overdrinker. I can't control myself. I always drink more than everybody else. I have a high tolerance. Like all of these beliefs that we tell ourselves, that is the biggest predictor of overdrinking and also how quickly you're going to be able to recover. It really is the mindset, how you see yourself and what you believe to be true. My primary work that, you know, if somebody's working with me, it is to retrain your brain to no longer associate alcohol with stress. Everything else falls into place with your brain chemistry and your nervous system now, very quickly.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought you said that you said was really important, and this would go to anyone who's trying to lose weight. Cortisol is not your friend when you're trying to lose weight. Not to mention the additional calories that are coming from the alcohol that are non-nutritious. There's no nutritious value to it, as you mentioned earlier. But that cortisol spike, I mean, to help understand, help us understand that, well, cortisol basically is something that happens when you're stressed. You know, it's a part of the adrenal thing. So you're hyped up, ready to fight or flight. And from a biological perspective, it shuts down weight loss. It shuts, you know, it wants you to store weight. It wants you to be ready to fight. It wants you to survive. It's a valuable hormone until it's not. And so now here we are with alcohol, and not only do we have additional calories, we have a catabolic hormone that wants our body to basically put on weight. And guys, that's where the term beer belly comes from. That's mm-hmm. where it wants you to put that weight too. So a woman in menopause or a man, that's why that's happening.
Yeah. To be even more specific, cortisol is our stress. Cortisol, we need cortisol. It is what moves us into action. It's an agitator, though. It's a get up off the couch and go get the thing, you know? And so what happens when you're drinking in a way that keeps your cortisol levels elevated is that you're never completing the stress cycle. And so you don't have that parasympathetic balance to the sympathetic nervous system. And so you're just always stuck in this agitated sense, but you don't understand why. And so what do? We start making up stories about our life. Well, my husband's an asshole. Well, my kids are stressing me out. Well, I've got too much going on at work. Time perception, I can't keep up. I've got too much to do. I'm in a hurry. I'm in a rush. Like, those are perceptions that actually speak to the experience of stress. Like, so whenever you're experiencing those things, that then your cortisol levels are high. So if you're living in a chronic state of, you know, just overwhelm and burnout, that is speaking to the hormone of cortisol. Yeah.
So now, as far as the stress piece of this, because again, there's the habit part of it that you've learned behavior. There's the stress piece. How do we break that chain? Because it's in behavior science, we'll talk about breaking the chain. How do we break that chain? Because it almost becomes automatic. Habits become automatic, and habits and values are really our identity. And so we just know, okay, well, we get home, we open up the bottle, we sit there, we read through the mail that we got that day, and then we start cooking dinner. And so it becomes that's the pattern that, you know, I talk to a lot of my clients. That's the pattern we find ourselves in. I do the thing. And a lot of this is put on autopilot, which is autopilot's actually a good thing because it keeps us from having to focus on everything around us. But those habits that we form, they're deep. They've got like deep grooves. How do we get past that?
Well, it begins with an awareness of what the real problem is, the real source of your stress, like diagnosing what's happening. Like the habit and the stress, it's the same thing. Like we get in the habit of living in stress, you know, that begins to feel normal. So the intention could be not to never drink or to not drink. It is, my intention is to be a calm and peaceful person who's walking through life one step at a time, taking deep breaths, taking care of myself. So it begins with an intention. Like, how do you want to be? And I often start with like a year out because nothing changes overnight. There's no right or wrong. It's all an experiment. There's no right amount to drink or not to drink. It is how you are feeling in your body, you know, and to speak to something you said before we got started, that the science that says, oh, you should have one glass or you should have two glasses, like there's some right amount to drink, is ridiculous when you think about, as human beings, we have different levels of stress. Our body chemistry is always changing. The amount of sleep we got, what's going on in our lives, how much we ate, how much we've exercised, like to decide in advance how much alcohol or any food or anything that you need is to say, I'm going to think instead of feel. We, as humans, we overthink everything. And the solution to your question is to learn how to live from the inside out. What does my body need right now? And why is my body feeling the way it is? And then educating ourselves, you know, if you're feeling stressed from work, I don't ever pour alcohol and stress because I understand alcohol jacks up my cortisol. So if I'm already jacked up, I might as well go put, you know, kerosene on the fire. I'm just trading a temporary relief for a lack of sleep tonight or anxiety tomorrow, because when you pour alcohol and stress, you get it. So it's multi-pronged, but I think it's the intention to enjoy living in your body and not need to escape your body, because you're only putting into it or not putting into it in the moment what you need or don't need.
Now, one of the other things that I hear quite often is that, well, I need alcohol to sleep, but I think it's pretty clear that that's not the kind of sleep we really need when it's all said and done. Can you talk a little bit about alcohol and sleep?
Well, first of all, Matthew Walker, who wrote Why We Sleep, he's a huge sleep expert, and I've gotten a lot of information from him. But he talks about that if you're going to drink, and this is funny, but he talks about if you're going to drink, you really should drink first thing in the morning. If you're going to have a beer, because that gives your cortisol levels time to peak, because again, alcohol's a drug. Like, you're going to have a cortisol spike. The more you drink, the more your brain has to counterbalance the dopamine with the cortisol to keep you awake so that you're not forgetting to breathe because you're so relaxed. And so what was the question?
Well, it's really about sleep. I mean, because people think that's how I can go to sleep. This is going to help me go to sleep.
Well, what really is going on there is if you are a regular drinker, your cortisol levels are really high and you're in a state of stress, that's not a sleepy state. And so what most of us do, what I did for years, was I drank so that I would kind of pass out. I would sedate myself. So I would get the benefit of the buzz, but then as soon as the buzz wears off, your cortisol levels are really high. And here's what I didn't know about alcohol and sleep, is that it blocks your REM sleep. So we have these natural cycles of REM and non-REM sleep. And REM sleep is so important for our memory, our emotions. You know, they say everything looks better on a good night's sleep. Well, that's because at night, your subconscious is kind of going through emotional memories, and a lot of the negative charge that gets attached to anger or something that happens, it gets processed, if you will, overnight, the energy of that. And so if you're not getting REM sleep, your mental health is quickly going down the toilet. Even if you're in bed with your eyes closed and you think you slept, if you're not getting that REM sleep, your emotional health, your mental health, as well as a lot of other processes are suffering. And I would have to say that the day I decided to quit drinking, yeah, I was hungover. Of course I was. But honestly, I was just exhausted. And I, for the first month where I wasn't drinking, I was sleeping 10 hours a night. And to assure that it's not true that you need alcohol to sleep, the first couple of nights, yeah, urine detox. It took me 8 or 9 days where I was still sweating in my bed at night. I didn't know I was addicted to alcohol till I quit drinking. But then I allowed the evidence of the withdrawals I was going through to just motivate me to, I'm detoxing my body from poison. Like, oh, so once I got through the detox process, I was sleeping like a baby. And I see that so often with my clients. You know, it's not always like perfect and seamless, but there's 100% chance you're going to sleep way better when there's no alcohol on board. Once you get through withdrawal, if you're a regular drinker and that's a thing for you.
Now, one of the things that, I don't know, I probably shouldn't even say this because this is going to, I know this is going to upset someone when I say this, but I think we live in a victim culture right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think everything is a disease.
Mm-hmm.
Because it allows you to kind of alleviate yourself of responsibility for where you are because you now have a disease. You know, why do we want to keep saying that alcoholism is a disease and not just a function of what we've done from a lifestyle perspective?
So I'm going to push back just a little bit. Nobody wakes up and wants to be a victim. This is a mindset in our culture that we are trained from a very young age in this, you know, and I'm not demonizing medications or anything else, but we are taught if we have a headache to take ibuprofen or acetaminophen. Although a headache is not caused by an acetaminophen deficiency, we are taught to ignore the root cause of whatever's happening in our life, to not even ask the question. We're not taught to think, wonder why I have a headache. We're taught to band-aid the symptoms because what we really value in our culture is productivity. And so you need to do whatever you need to keep going, when in reality, a headache or symptoms of, you know, an illness coming on, it's not that even your body is sick, your body is healing, and it needs more time and attention right now to do the healing. So we become victims because we don't understand that we're giving away our power by not looking at the cause of any symptom that we're dealing with and actually resolving it. We're taught to treat it and move on and keep going and don't ask questions. And quite frankly, our economy would collapse because if everybody did that, because wellness is not profitable. If you don't need to go to the doctor and to the store and to get all the things to feel better, including alcohol, to relieve the stress that's caused by all the, you know, go, go, go culture, hustle culture of our lifestyle. If all the economy wouldn't really be doing that well if we didn't need to go to the store and buy things to make us better. And so the story in our head just becomes, I need that to feel better. Where what I think you talk about and I'm in alignment with is I reversed it upside down. You know, who do I need to be? What do I need so that I can do better? You know, it's like taking care of your body first. Again, it's living from the inside out. And the inspiration I want to hand to people is there is nothing more powerful than being a person who understands that you're the cause of your own problems, because then you're also the solution. That's freedom. That's autonomy to take full responsibility that something you're doing or thinking or taking or whatever is causing the problem, and you have the power to change that.
Yeah. That's why a lot of times I'll be talking to my clients and they'll be like, well, there's, you know, there's going to be my daughter's wedding, or there's this thing. And I'll be like, look, you know, is that if I don't want to drink, I won't drink. But at the same time, if my best friend called me and said, man, I'm going through something and I need to, can we just meet, have a couple beers and talk? I'm going to go, like I'm supposed to as a good friend, I'm going to go sit down and have a couple beers with him. Now I'm going to buy the best beer I can get wherever we go and make it worth it. And that's where I'll tell my clients, I'm like, if you decide that you want to go do something, you're a grown ass woman, go do it, you know, just yeah. go be you. Because if we sit down and we say, I can't, you know, we set that I can't label on, I can't drink, I can't do this. Eventually that's what we see. It's you don't see a pink elephant.
And right.
Suddenly that's all we see is yeah. the pink elephant. How do we deal with a society that we live in, a real world that we live in, where alcohol is basically the bathwater we have everywhere, you know, it's the air we breathe for most of our society. It's unavoidable, and you don't want to be that weirdo that, you know, or maybe you do and you're okay with that. And hopefully you are okay with that most of the time. But if you're in a society where alcohol is how we celebrate, alcohol is how we live, how do you get comfortable living from the inside out in that kind of environment?
So first of all, I have a radical approach to helping people quit drinking. And that's, we're going to start with the truth, which is you can drink as much as you want, whenever you want. Like, all responsibility is on you, full choice. Now, how much do you want to drink? Like, I teach people that it's about drinking in a way that makes you happy. And as we all know, as a general rule, the more you drink, the worse you feel. So there is no, I can't drink because I can't control myself, or I can't drink because, you know, alcohol is so bad. It's, I can absolutely drink as much as I want, whenever I want. That is that personal power. Then you're not a victim. You have full choice and complete control. And here's something that is a really healthy reframe, I think. Like, I don't put anything into my body to make you feel better. Like, your emotions are on your side of the street. Mine are on mine. My body is not a trash can. I don't drink or eat anything to be polite, not to say I'm not a human. And if my dad makes cookies, fine, I'll take a bite. You know, I do things like that, but that's a choice. I don't have to. And so this idea that you're going out for drinks, let's just talk about that for a minute. There's a lot of drinks on the menu. And the idea that drinking is more of an activity, like we're going to get together and drink. Drinking's a drug. Alcohol's a drug. It's not a sport. And so changing the mindset that drinking is just, or alcohol is just one of the drinks on the menu. If somebody meets me and says, hey, do you want to meet for a drink? I don't say, well, I can, but I'm not having alcohol. It would just be like sitting down and eating food, and you got the gluten-free pizza and I got, you know, the salad or whatever. Like, I can order a drink without alcohol, without making that mean that I'm not supporting you or that I'm not participating. Like, just realizing that you have a choice, you can drink as much as you want. And it would be like, you know, saying, well, I have to have mayonnaise on my burger because you have mayonnaise on your burger. It's like, we just taking alcohol off the throne, it's not that big of a deal. And then realizing, how do you want to feel in your body? You're responsible for that. If you have a hangover tomorrow, it's not because somebody's getting a divorce and you had to listen. It's because you drank alcohol. Like, let's connect the dots, you know, and take full responsibility. So I teach people that there's a difference between having a drink and drinking, and that there are lots of drinks if you want to have a drink. They don't have to have alcohol. And the more people that stand up and demand better options, you know, there's great non-alcoholic beers out there. You can have a mocktail menu. You know, some of the better restaurants are offering these things now. So you should never have to explain why you are or are not drinking. And you can take 100% responsibility for how your body's feeling and what you need and what makes you happy in that moment.
I like that. I like that a lot. So when someone realizes that they need to do something, what do you think their first steps should be?
I would start with the why. I would start with a vision. So it's not, why do you have to do what you want to do, right? That's what you're asking, is what's the through line? Who do I want to be in a year? And what are the 365 action steps I need to take to get there? So understanding what you want, and then also orienting yourself in a change process with a growth mindset, so that it's not, oh, I'm going to wake up on Monday and be completely perfect and never do any of the other things or the bad things or the bad habits again. Nope, you're going to fall off and on. And this growth mindset is makes the difference between those people who yo-yo diet, or, you know, do a quick win and all or nothing extreme, no alcohol, no sugar, no whatever. And then 3 months later, they're right back where they were because they didn't incorporate that into their lifestyle. So I think it's very important to have a vision, an identity, a goal. What do you want? A reason. Why do you want it? And then a growth mindset that allows you to give yourself partial credit for wins and look at where you're learning, and any mistakes you do make are teaching you what happened there. And usually the mistake is that, oh, I went unconscious. I was just running in a subconscious habit. I was in a stress response and I didn't really have the willpower. So now it's, well, how can I not drink? It's, how can I make sure that I'm not in a stress response in this situation? Because your willpower is inversely proportional to your stress. The more stress you feel, the more those old subconscious programs take over. So the problem is not, no, don't drink. The problem is don't feel like you need a drink, and go upstream to the self-care practices, the sleep, the healthy eating, and the movement. Like, if you take care of your body all day long, you're not going to show up at 6 o'clock having not peed, not eaten, and then have no willpower to control your behavior and make good decisions.
Now, in all fairness, I didn't give you this question ahead of time, but it's a question that I do ask of all of my guests. So if you need an extra minute, it's cool. We can clip that little weight out. But I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. Mm-hmm. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
Okay, let's see. Three strategies to get and stay well. First of all, identify it as a goal. Like, identify as a person who is, if you don't feel well, then a person who is highest priority is becoming well. The second thing is to immerse yourself in the mindset you want to adopt. Podcasts, books, people. Be very aware that the things you think, it's just like, you are what you eat, you are also what you think. And so the more you expose yourself to the ideas, the mindsets, the role models, people who have done it like you want to do it, people who have had it harder than you, the more you expose yourself to the process of change and the strategies to change, the better off you're going to be. And then the third strategy for wellness, I got to go with sleep. Like, what would change in your life if you were well rested? As women, I have this clip I've seen, like, the next revolution will be led by well rested women. Nobody wins a prize for being jacked up all the time and out of your mind with stress. So those would be my things.
Thank you for that. Colleen, if someone wanted to learn more about you and what you're doing over there at It's Not About the Alcohol, where would you like for me to send them?
Well, the podcast, my podcast is a great place to start. It's Not About the Alcohol. And my website is recoverwithcolleen.com. So two L's, two E's, recoverwithcolleen.com.
Okay. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/632, and I'll be sure to have the links there. Colleen, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you, Alan. It was good to speak with you.
Welcome back, Raz.
Hey, Alan. You know, that was a conversation about alcohol that I don't think I've ever heard anything like it before. It was really interesting to hear how Colleen, I guess, had a revelation. She realized that she had an unhealthy relationship with alcohol, and I'm glad to hear that she figured it all out and made it through the other side in a way that was healthy for her. It's a very interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to upset some people when I say this, but you know, alcohol is addictive. Caffeine is addictive. Nicotine is addictive. Sugar's addictive. There's a lot of addictive things out there But I really have a hard time calling it a disease. Mm-hmm. And okay, before you get all upset, let me kind of explain this. When you say something is a disease, you effectively say you're the victim of something. Now, cancer is a disease. A virus getting into your body and infecting you is a disease. A bacteria getting into a wound or your body and infecting you is a disease. But an action, an activity, I have a hard time seeing it as a disease because you immediately say you're a victim. Mm-hmm. And now if you're a victim of something, you don't have control. You can't do moderation. And so what Colleen's coaching right here is talking about is basically moderation, where you are the adult in the room telling your amygdala, yes, that's a stress response. Don't use alcohol for stress. Mm-hmm. Okay. She wrote in a blog post not long ago that she sat there one day and she realized she was thinking about getting a drink. Now, this was not, she's going to a get together and decide she's going to have a drink and sit around and talk to her friends. And that was going to be more enjoyable than not mm-hmm. having a drink. This was her just in a moment, probably alone, thinking about alcohol mm-hmm. as a solution for stress. And so she was able to say, no, this is not an appropriate time to have a drink. And therefore mm-hmm. I'm not going to, but she still kind of almost, I'm going to say she reprimanded herself, but she caught it. And she realized mm-hmm. that this was a habit of, you know, trigger and then mm-hmm. activity, which would have been opening up a bottle of wine or going to the refrigerator and getting a beer, whatever your thing. Mm-hmm. And she realized that's not what I want to do. That's not who I am. Mm-hmm. So she is teaching some moderation as a tool. And if you're a moderation person, that's great. Mm-hmm. If you're an all or nothing person, it's not, because you right. won't have breaks. And yeah. so you have to know yourself, but the whole point of saying, well, no, I have this disease, feel sorry for me. Mm-hmm. You don't have the disease yet. If you keep doing this, then the diseases will come.
Yeah.
So just realize you do have control over yourself unless you decide you don't. And mm-hmm. then if you decide you don't, you don't.
Right.
So well, this is not a process that you'd sit there and say, well, no, I can do this. I can do moderation. That's why mm-hmm. all of these other approaches are all, you know, okay, you've got to go completely sober. You got to earn your coin. You got to do your thing. And for a lot of people, that is absolutely the approach they have to take. Mm-hmm. But for others, they're like, you know, well, no, I tell people I can say no, but can you? But then if you can, then this is an approach where you say, okay, I'm going to be surrounded by alcohol, alcohol ads, and everything else my whole life. I mean, mm-hmm. I live in Bocas. There's bars everywhere. There's a drinking culture. And I mean, it really is. They retired to drink. But being in a drinking culture, you have to make decisions about how you're going to approach your life. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to say, well, I'll have a drink when I want to, mm-hmm. a drink right. when I want to, or two drinks when I want to, then that's fine. But if you realize it never stops at one or two, or you realize that you're doing it all the time, mm-hmm. you're not in control. But it's not a disease. I'm sorry. I'm not going to agree that it's a disease.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know how the term disease gets labeled. You know, I feel like sometimes it's an insurance issue. If a doctor can explain that it's a disease, then you can maybe get some sort of a treatment for it. But yeah, I don't know how that gets
defined. That's backwards healthcare. That's not healthcare anymore. That's, you know, don't tell me you don't have that. You have sick care. And so yes. what we have to label you as sick to mm-hmm. help you versus just saying, okay, let's stop this before you get sick. Nothing's built that way. And that's unfortunate. Right. That's unfortunate right. because it should be. And the fact that I have to label you as sick or diseased to get you any help
to
at
get
all.
Yes. It's
horrible.
Yeah.
That's just horrible. So, you know, no, let's not adjust our language and our feelings mm-hmm. about ourselves based on what our system allows.
Right.
Take control and not be the victim to start with.
Well, there's a couple of things here, Alan. I think that she realized that she was turning to alcohol when she was feeling stressed out. And, you know, I turned to running I turn to coffee. I actually knit in the wintertime because I feel it's so relaxing. But I have a lot of outlets. But
how many sweaters does he have?
My dog has a lot of sweaters. But I think that's the point, is like when you're feeling stressed, you know, I think it's important to recognize those feelings and then find a healthy way to manage them. And obviously alcohol is not one of them. In fact, one of the other things that she mentioned right at the beginning was that alcohol is not a food group, which isn't that important to know. Yeah. And then later on, she mentioned how alcohol, I mean, basically it's useless calories, which I have a thing about useless calories, and it also creates cortisol. And right now, you know, I'm in menopause. I already have enough cortisol going on in my body. And, you know, alcohol is certainly not a benefit. It's not useful for me in what I'm trying to accomplish in all of my training and everything. So it's an interesting new way to look at alcohol or drinking.
Yeah. We don't need to demonize cortisol as it is. Now, cortisol is a very important hormone in that when you're about to wake up in the morning, like sunrise comes along, your body has a little surge of cortisol. That's a normal circadian rhythm. And what that cortisol does is tells your body, hey, it's time to get up. Let's start moving around. And that's good. It wakes us up, just like you know that melatonin is sort of what settles us down. So those chemicals in our brain and all that, there's a process to all of that. The hormones and, you know, the neurotransmitters, all they have a role in helping us get a good night's sleep and then getting up in the morning. Cortisol is also important when you see the kid walking out in the road and there's a car coming and you have to dash out there and pull the kid from certain doom. Cortisol is the hormone that, along with adrenaline and other things, that make that happen. So there's a value to it. It keeps us alive. But when there's too much of it or at the wrong times, it creates a problem. And that's where the whole, you know, and I think we'd mentioned this before, like after you do your run, your 10K, 5K, half marathon, everybody goes and they have a beer. Beer. Okay. So there's not, I don't think that's a problem at all because you've depleted some of the muscle glycogen, some of the liver got glycogen. So your body is kind of jonesing for some fuel at this point. And the alcohol goes in. Now your body's going to burn that alcohol first because this is a toxin. Get this out of our system. And then yes, you've got more carbohydrates coming off of that that's floating around your system. And so while you may, again, cortisol is going to kind of kick in, it's already there because you just did this hard race, but it's going to kick in. It's going to want to store it and it's going to store it in your belly. But at the same time, you need it in your muscles and your liver. And so it's going to pull over there. Insulin spike's going to go up. It's going to say, okay, how are we doing over here? Oh, you guys do need this. It's going to want to put it over there. And so is that the best post-race fuel? Probably not.
Right.
But it's also not something that I would say, okay, as a no-go, this is a completely unhealthy thing. Because again, usually at the end of the race, it's a party. It's friends. Sure. It's everybody's hanging around, cheering. We're going to have to hang out a little bit to see who wins the medals and who doesn't. And that kind of thing, especially with your run club, because a lot of them are going to get called up there and you guys got to do your little hoot, whichever club it is. Yeah.
Okay. That's what we do.
That's what you do. And so that's fun. That you're now you're an entertaining thing and it's not a thing. Now, again, if you sat there and had six beers after a race, your body's not needing that much extra muscle and liver glycogen. So it's going to put it somewhere else. And cortisol pretty much says, make a beer belly. And so if you're in menopause or you're a man, that's why that's happening, you know, because your body says, let's make this. So for women, it starts as a little pooch, the lower abs. And then as they drink, it gets bigger and it grows. Men, the same thing. We don't necessarily see the little pooch, but we start to get the beer belly. And like, so you're building your shed. Great, but not healthy and not sexy. So, you know, it's just one of those things to say alcohol can be a good thing if it's helping lubricate your social life and make you feel better in certain situations and it's enjoyable. But there are people that cannot do moderation and you know who you are. If you consider it a disease and you're a victim of this, then you're not one of those people. If you're someone who just knows I'm all or nothing, if I have two beers, I'm having six. Mm-hmm. If you just know that's how you're wired, then you may need to abstain from alcohol. Mm-hmm. There are no, you know, again, when they do the health benefits, it's hilarious, the science. And you can do science on anything. In mm-hmm. fact, I recently saw a study where they had one set of participants take a statin to mm-hmm. lower their LDL, and mm-hmm. another group was eating Oreo cookies.
Oh.
And the group that oh. ate Oreo cookies lowered their cholesterol more than the people who took a statin.
Alan, that's crazy. That is crazy.
But it's true. It's true. I'll even put the link in the show notes. So you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/632 and I will put the link in the show notes. It was a real study by a doctor that basically wanted to do something that got attention. And so he chose Oreo cookies as the placebo or the medication, and maybe the statins were the placebo. I don't know, but they were more effective than statins in lowering cholesterol. So don't go start eating Oreos. Just the people who said alcohol is healthy for you, the amount of resveratrol that you would have to consume, mm-hmm. you would drink yourself to death before you got there, because the amount that they were giving the rats was insane. So that's rat crazy. Study does not equal human study. Although the Oreo study was a human study.
It's crazy. Oh my goodness.
So just realize that science can tell you exactly what, just like statistics can tell you exactly mm-hmm. what you wanted to say. If you just take the time to structure it the right way, this is no different. So don't think there's a healthy level. Don't think there's a healthy thing. If it is making your social life a little better because you occasionally have some drinks with your friends, or you go out with your friends when they're upset and you have a beer or two, that's, or martini or two, or even a wine or two, that's okay. That's okay. Mm-hmm. You're not killing yourself doing that, but mm-hmm. just realize that there's no healthy level of alcohol. There's no RDA for alcohol.
Right. Nope.
And
not
so
a food group.
Just, not a food group, not a nutrition, anything. There's no nutrition in it at all. No. In fact, alcohol is a toxin.
Yeah.
And so you, if you are drinking alcohol regularly and trying to lose weight, it's working against you. It's just 100% working against you. While there's a time and a place to enjoy it, if weight loss is your goal, I would say don't. But
a lot of people
still are, but just do it responsibly. And if you know you can't do it responsibly, don't do it at all.
That's pretty solid.
All right. And I want to thank the folks in the Facebook group for kind of giving us some ideas of what they wanted us to talk about. This was one. Sarah awesome. Was the one who posted in a Facebook group that she wanted us to talk about this. So thank you, Sarah, for that. If you go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group, you can join us at 40 Plus Fitness Podcast Group. And there we discuss all kinds of things and do all kinds of interesting things. And yes, I'm going to typically solicit you in the group for things that you want me to cover. So if you're interested in being a part of the podcast and helping us build this, that's where you want to go.
Awesome. That's great. Thanks, Sarah.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you next week. Okay.
Take care, Alan.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we discuss limiting beliefs. Do you believe you can lose the weight and get fit? Until then, have a happy and healthy week.